Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. This is episode number 281, dedicated to a man who on July 3rd, 1966, became the first National League player and only pitcher to hit two grand slams in one game, Mr. Tony Cloninger. And as always, thank you for listening and downloading another episode of the podcast. During today's episode, Ian Eagle is back with us once again. Him and I go over what it means for him to be the new voice of the Final Four and a whole lot more. One thing that is going to be a staple every summer on this show is Ian Eagle being here with us 1 week out of the year. We had him on in 2020, didn't have him on in 2021, had him back in 2022, and once again in 2023. You hear him call Brooklyn Nets games if you live in the Brooklyn area. You hear him call games on CBS, on TNT. You hear him call games at the NCAA tournament. You used to hear him call the French Open. He's one of the most recognizable play-by-play voices in all of sports, and he's here with us today on the Jay Stevens Podcast. Let's go ahead and take a trip to the state of New York to enjoy my fun conversation with Mr. Ian Eagle. Every summer, I try to have different guests on the show that are different. Maybe a voice of a team or maybe somebody locally in Indianapolis that I watch or listen to on the radio because I just enjoy talking to them about sports. And there's one guest in the summer that we have on that generates more buzz than anybody else. It's Ian Eagle of CBS Sports, of Turner, and of the YES Network. Ian, welcome back to the Jay Stevens Podcast.
I feel like I'm a third timer. Is my math correct, Jay?
Your math is correct. We, for some reason, did not connect in 2021, but got back in 2022, and this is the third time for Ian Eagle here on the podcast. And last year, he came on, and I did a little research. And my research, Ian, is not reading things about you. It's listening to podcasts, and we discussed things that you don't eat last year at the top of the show, and condiments came up. You don't eat, never eaten condiments. Not just he doesn't eat them, never. He's never eaten them. Never had a salad, never had coffee, never had peach, never had a melon, never had an eggplant. And you said last year you'd come on the show and discuss five more things you've never eaten. So, Ian, I'm backing away. The floor is yours.
Oh, man. Right out of the gate, we're dealing with my eating issues, the palate of an 8-year-old child. It's sad. I don't normally lock in on this because if this is what I'm leading with people, there's often a sense of, okay, I don't want to know this dude.
Right.
Forget about it. I don't want to be friends with him. I don't want to know him. So now that I've heard your list, which is actually my list, out in the open, I am flabbergasted myself. I can't believe it, but it's all true. All of the foods that you listed, I do not consume. There are many others. If you go into vegetables and fruits, there's a pretty good chance that I haven't had it or I don't eat it.
Broccoli?
No, I like broccoli.
Okay.
Good. Broccoli's good. Put a little garlic in there. Yeah, no, I'm good on broccoli.
It's one thing, my fiance, when her and I got together, I told her I'm not a big coffee person. Mm-hmm. And she is. I mean, one cup in the morning, not enough. Got to have another cup in the morning of coffee. And so she's been doing a good job of getting me acclimated and getting me to start drinking coffee. I don't think she's heard last year's episode. And if she has, she may have forgotten when I told her that Ian Eagle's coming on the show that you don't drink coffee. I'm starting to come around and figure out there's ways that I can enjoy coffee. Now, don't get me like straight black, none of that stuff. That's not me. But when it comes to coffee, you give me some flavor, dial down the coffee taste. I'm cool. But it's interesting in your profession, long hours sometimes traveling, coffee might help you, but that's still one thing that's not something you do on a regular basis or even at all.
Jay, did you talk to my wife between last year's podcast and this podcast? Because I feel like you're mirroring what she has also said. And she's increased the conversation over the last, I'd say, 3 months. You know, when I hit the NBA playoffs and I start to wind down, I'm feeling the rigors of the season. And again, I sign up for this. There's no complaining. This is part of the deal. I go in with my eyes wide open what the fall, the winter, the spring will look like. But it's one thing to put it on paper, and it's another thing to actually go out and do it. You have to do it. It's great when you list the games you're going to do and you put it on a big calendar. You actually have to fly to Sacramento and do the game. Yes. And then fly to Memphis and do the game, and then fly back to New York, but then head back out and do the game in San Francisco. So everything you just said, it makes perfect sense that I should be a coffee consumer. And yet I don't know if it's just the Ripken-like streak at this point, or I'm just pigheaded and I won't move off my position. It's probably a combination of all of the above. It sounds like with you, I don't want to make across the board generalizations. It sounds like you might be venturing into the coffee / dessert category, where you like the flavoring, but you don't necessarily like the coffee itself.
That's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it. Because the other day, my fiance ended up saying this has more coffee in it than normal, because she knows the coffee is not something that I enjoy. She just gets it straight. I'm like, how do you do straight black coffee? It's what she does, man. It's what she does. You were talking about the traveling and your schedule of things you signed up for. And something that was not in the email that I sent, which completely escaped my mind, busy summer for a lot of us. You have recently been announced and named the new voice of the Final Four. And I've heard you describe it in a way that many people will say, Ian, why do you describe it like that? Why are you so comfortable describing it in a way that in the person's eyes, like myself, or people listening to this or watching this, they're like, you're the voice of the Final Four, following Jim Nance, who has been doing this for a really long time. This is a big deal, but you're coming into it in a very, I think, wise approach and wise way to view this big monumental moment for numerous broadcasters. How are you viewing? I don't say how you're doing it, but how do you view being the new voice of the Final Four?
Yeah, Jay, it's not something that came out of left field. So this wasn't just out of nowhere I had to formulate my opinions. It's something that had been talked about for a few years leading up to it. So I think I put into context what it all meant in many ways before I got to the ultimate day where the general public found out about it. And it's not to minimize the assignment at all. If anything, it's recognizing that it is a big deal and it is a big step. But maybe it's just my way of navigating through it. I just feel like it's one more weekend of my life that I was not doing in my normal broadcast year. I had done the world feed a couple of times during my career, just based on circumstances, but the Final Four was not part of my sports calendar. I'd watch it. I would certainly take it in, no matter what my responsibilities might have been elsewhere doing the NBA. But now it's a part of what I'm doing, and it's three more games. And if I make it bigger than that, I think that's when you can get overwhelmed by what it is. If you put it in the context of it being just a new part of my season, and the fact that I do so many basketball games over the course of a year, and the rhythm of that, maybe you don't get sucked into the enormity of it. Look, I've done big games. I've had big assignments. Yeah, there's a different vibe going into it. But your job is to normalize it and make it feel comfortable. Comfortable to the viewer and comfortable to your partners and to your production team. So that's always my objective. I think I'll probably feel a little different leading up to it next year because it's something new and something different. But ultimately, when you get right down to it, it's another basketball game. And it's one that has a little more importance to it, some more eyeballs on it, but it's not going to change the way that I do basketball. Do the game that you've always done, because that's why you got hired, not to become something else, but to continue what you've already been doing.
In doing this, and I don't know, next year you have a friendship with Bill Raftery, so I don't know if he's still going to be planning to do this event next year, but let's hypothetically say Bill Raftery is still on the call of the Final Four. You've been on here. We've discussed stories from your history and you beginning to call the Nets games, and Raftery was there. You guys had that connection there, but that's lasted literal decades from you guys in different broadcasting careers, but still having that connection and friendship. What does it mean to you to be able to do that event with him?
Well, that just makes it even more special. Obviously, if you get this type of assignment, it's one of the ones you dream about as a broadcaster. So starting with that premise, you've already achieved something that in your wildest fantasies, you might allow yourself to go there. But more often than not, you realized, okay, the percentages are pretty low that this might happen. So the fact that you get to that place in and of itself, you're living out something that you really just put in your dreamscape. To do it with someone who's been so instrumental in your career and on a personal level, this is not just someone that I've done a lot of games with.
Right.
It's someone that I've spent a lot of time with, not just on the broadcast side, but our families, our friends. He has been someone that I've leaned on as a peer. That's the other part with Bill. It was never father, son, uncle, nephew. He treats people like they're his equals. So as a young broadcaster and a young person, I started working with him when I was 25 years old. I met him when I was 21 years old. When you see someone that brings that sort of demeanor and approach to life, it does rub off on you and you don't even know it. It's one of those things that I think back now and I realize that so many of the things that I noticed and observed from him in the mid 90s into the aughts, I've applied by osmosis, not him telling me, well, you should maybe approach it this way and do it that way. No, he's not that type. He's someone who makes you feel welcome and he makes strangers feel welcome. So who wouldn't want that to be part of who they are and part of the attributes that they bring? My dad played a big role in that as well. My father, who passed away now, hard to believe it's been nearly 15 years.
Oh, wow.
But similar in that approach to life, put everybody at ease. And that's a talent. That's a skill. That's a philosophy. I remember when my kids were young, maybe they were 10 and 8, and they'd come home from school and they'd describe a situation and they said, oh, it was so awkward. The situation was so awkward. And I thought to myself, I let it go a couple of times and now I would hear it again and I would hear it again. And maybe the third or fourth time that they described this at the dinner table, I said, you know something, guys, I got to give you a piece of advice here. Awkward situations only occur if you allow them to be awkward. Any situation in life can be awkward.
Yeah.
If you allow it to be so. So it's incumbent upon you to recognize a situation, diffuse it, and make it more comfortable. And that's been a big part of my philosophy on the air as well, by the way. We all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect doing this job. Nobody pitches a perfect game right from the day they start working in this industry. There's bumps along the way. How do you handle those bumps? And so what I noticed with Bill and with my dad as well, both used humor a great deal to diffuse situations. And I've probably done a lot of the same. So on the air, off the air, that's a general life philosophy of how you want to treat others. And we're all put in peculiar situations, but we all have the power to make those situations not quite as bumpy if we handle them with the proper amount of decorum, class, and thoughtfulness.
One of the reasons why I enjoy you as a broadcaster is because it seems like every person or group you're paired with, you're grouped with on the broadcast, it's like your friends. And I remember, I want to say it was 2020. I forget when you and Charles Davis got together for the first time for NFL, but you had discussed and said there were Zoom calls where you guys are just talking about life and family and getting to know each other and really created a friendship over the internet because we were locked at home. And so when I see here you and Bill Raftery or even Charles Davis or other broadcasters there, I think I mentioned Jim Jackson one time too. It seems like everybody, and age doesn't matter, it seems like everybody you do a game with, you're friends with. And it comes across in the broadcast. And from my standpoint, it makes me enjoy you and specifically Bill Raftery more because it's not just a basketball game that you guys are commentating or the game you're describing. It's a little friendship on TV, on display, two guys having fun talking about a game they love.
Jay, that means a lot. You've said a lot of nice things to me in now the three times that we've had a chance to chat. That one probably resonates the most because it's the one that I am most proud of. And it's not a conscious effort. It's natural.
Yeah.
And it's organic. Not everybody you work with is going to be your best friend. That's just life in general. You can't get to that level with every person you come in contact with. But you can find commonality. You can show proper respect. You can show someone that you're a good teammate and that you have their back. And there have been instances that I've been in where I've only worked with a person once, one time. But some bond was formed based on the way the broadcast went. Them knowing, a glance, a touch of the shoulder, a nod, eye contact. All of these things that we may take for granted come into play. And it's coming from a real place. I'm actually interested in what they have to say. I'm nodding because I agree with what they say. And I'm tagging something they said because I know it's going to make the show better and it's going to help validate their point. During the 1998 NBA lockout, I was under contract with MSG. They made the determination at that point not to pay us because there were no games. Yeah. But I give them a lot of credit. They were trying to find work. And it was me and Mike Breen. Mike Breen on the Knicks side. At that point, the Nets were under the Sports Channel umbrella, which was owned by MSG. So my paycheck was MSG. So Mike and I, we were doing a talk show on the MSG network just so that we could get paid. Talk of the town. And if Mike and I were on a podcast discussing it, we would have a bunch of laughs because it was fun and funny that the two of us were thrown into the situation. We were friends, so it wasn't this departure, but we truly got tossed into it because they were trying to do right by us. Well, one of the assignments was a women's basketball game at MSG. And I got assigned a partner who I wasn't that familiar with her work. The last time I had done women's basketball was my freshman year at Syracuse University. So 1987. So we're talking about a while, 11 years. And I get paired up with Doris Burke. She was on the rise. She was certainly making a name for herself within the women's college game. She had not broken through yet with NBA, and the WNBA, as we know, wasn't even a thing. So we get paired up. I don't know her. She doesn't know me other than reputation. We do one game together, and it was Tennessee Rutgers at MSG. And we had a blast. And every time I see her, I think back to that time, which we're now talking about 25 years ago, where we had to build up trust over basically 90 minutes before we went on the air. Literally, hi, Doris, I'm Ian. Shake her hand. We're going to be doing the game together, coming up here in an hour and a half. And it was just such a great lesson for me that you can find chemistry if you're open to it, listening to your partner, playing off what they say, and being a good teammate more than anything else. So that's not just one outlier event in my career. That's happened a number of times where I've just had a random partner. We do one game and we walk away, both of us thinking, wow, that was really good and fun. And it's based on two people understanding that the goal is to put on a good show and to do right by the audience and consider the viewer in that instance. It's not about me and it's not about her. It's about us and how we do the job together. So much appreciated, Jay. That's probably the nicest thing you could say about me, truly, as a broadcaster.
And I meant every word of it. And also when I'm listening to you discuss Doris Burke and working with her back then, it makes me think about you working with, I think Sarah Kustak is still with Yes right now. And so that moment back then is one thing, but you're working with another talented female right now consistently. What does it mean to you to see different women in sports, let's stick with basketball right now, to see them coming up and making a name for themselves and working with you and having fun while doing it?
Yeah, it just jarred another memory, Jay. There was an all-star game for the NBA. Something happened. There was a scheduling conflict. They asked me to step in a role. I think it was 2010. I'd have to look back. New Orleans.
Okay.
And like literally on a Wednesday, they called and said, hey, could you fly tomorrow to All-Star and help us out? And I did not have a college game that weekend. And I said, you got it. And I did it. And one of the assignments was the G League All-Star game.
Yeah.
And I got paired with Nancy Lieberman, one of the best basketball players of all time. Had never met her in my life. Obviously, I'd never worked with her. And met her 60 minutes before the game. Sat down, chatted, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, background, some personal stuff, some basketball philosophy. And then guess what? Away you go. And we did the game. Right after the game, she took the headset off. She turned to me and she said, wow, feels like we've been doing games for 20 years. And I take a lot of pride in that. Sarah, amazing talent, tremendous person, incredible insight, terrific instincts. Who wouldn't want to work
right
with someone like that?
Yeah.
So the difference in the Sarah dynamic is Sarah was our sideline reporter before she ever got a chance to do a few games. And she filled in one of the years. I think she did two games as an analyst. And that was the first time she had done that role. And she did well. And then the next year she did 10 games. And then the next year she got the bigger chunk of the schedule. And she's never looked back because she's really prepared and extremely talented and just a pleasure to work with, a pleasure to be around. What you see is what you get. She's passionate about the game. She's brightness in who she is. So she walks into a room and you're getting a positive force. And that shouldn't be slept on in this world. Mm-mm. You know, think about it, Jay. This is a very simple concept. But if you're in a room and you're with a group of people and the door opens and you have no idea who's walking in next, it can go one of two ways. Well, one of three ways. One way is the person walks in and it has no impact. Everybody turns and they go back to what they're doing. And that's that. The second option is they walk in and now all of a sudden it's changed, shifted the dynamic in the room. Conversations that were aplenty now have calmed down, or the volume level lowers a bit, or now you're thinking about what you're saying because that person isn't really a part of this. That happens a lot. Or the third option is someone walks in the room and people are actually excited that that person entered, and they know it's going to change the whole feel of the room. Their presence is going to bring positivity and sunshine. And that's how I would describe Sarah. She walks into a room and whoever's in there immediately feels better.
Yeah.
That's pretty high praise for a human being. I put Bill Raftery in the same category. He walks in, no matter where you are, no matter who you're with, and people are happy to see him. That's a pretty good place to get to in life.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I see, every time I see pictures or videos of the Nets crew, you, Sarah Kustak, I know Michael Grady was up there occasionally. Yep. I think Ryan Rucco does it every now and then. Richard Jefferson, it's the entire crew. It doesn't matter who's doing play-by-play, who's color commentary. The entire crew is just having fun, and they enjoy being together. And that's one thing that I enjoy. I guess I keep going back to the same thing. It's just enjoyable, and I think kind of refreshing. Some things we think would be simple, like just be nice to people. Like just smile. Like you would think those things would be like common knowledge. People would do it. They don't, which is why it's so nice and refreshing that every time I see, I know it's a Nets broadcast, I see the court. Oh, I don't care who's on the call of that game or who Ian Eagle's working with. They're having fun. That's one thing I like about podcasting, I like about sports, is simply being able to have fun. And I like all the things. Is there anything maybe that maybe makes your job over the top? Say like, oh, well, this moment, I just like an over the top moment, like pinch me. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm having fun in the moment, but this is more fun than normal.
Add Megan Triplett to that list. So Michael Grady took the Minnesota Timberwolves play-by-play job. He deserved it. It's been incredible. He's crushed it.
Yes.
And you know, Michael and I had some deep conversations prior to it. The next step for him was to do games consistently and get those repetitions. And he's just taking the ball and running with it. Megan came over. She had been working with the Memphis Grizzlies and immediately understood that, this is a group that likes to laugh, but takes their work seriously and it matters to them. There's that very fine line, Jay, of, you want to have fun, you want to bring levity, and that's very important to me, but it's also picking and choosing the right spots for that and recognizing when it's time to be serious, you got to be serious. As far as those moments, those pinch me moments, look, I think there's a sense of wonder in what I do, and I try to bring that. That's coming from a guttural place because it is everything that I visualized as a kid that I wanted to do. The NFL, the NBA, college basketball. You know, I did tennis for many years. I was a huge tennis fan as a kid. These different events that I've had the good fortune of calling and traveling around the country doing this for a living. If you start taking that for granted, then some of that is lost on the air. And the thing about what I have learned in this business is people can sniff out when something isn't real.
Yeah.
They can, whether it's on one broadcast or a series of broadcasts. You can't fool the general public. Mm-mm. And you shouldn't be trying to. So if something isn't coming from a genuine place, then it's on you to figure out, how do I get there? For me, I think the tournament every year is one of those moments where you're in the middle of a back and forth game where crowds have shown up with no rooting interest whatsoever. Most sporting events you go to, you have a pretty good idea whose side the crowd is going to be on a given day. You go to Pittsburgh for a Steelers-Ravens game, you have a pretty good sense. There might be a smattering of Ravens fans, but for the most part, it's going to be pro-Steelers. And if Pittsburgh scores a touchdown, as a play-by-play man, you're going to be embracing the crowd and using it to your advantage. You go to an NCAA tournament game, you have no idea. There are fans that show up that in real time are determining who they want to root for based on the way the team plays, one particular player, a connection, their cousin's friend went to this university. That's all it takes in the NCAA tournament, or just a flat out underdog story that captures people's imagination. So I can't tell you how many times I've been in an arena and I've seen up close and personal the power that comes with that, the David Goliath matchup. So there have been a number of those pinch me moments. The thing with play-by-play, and this is where you really have to be cognizant and careful, it requires so much concentration and supreme focus. So, yes, you want to be as one with the event that you're covering. You want to feel the energy of the crowd, and you want to be on top of the action. So how do you do that and balance it the right way where you're emoting in a manner that feels right, but also knowing that you still have to do your job. You still have to identify who's got the ball, what are they doing with it, score, time, situation, all of those things. So you really are a traffic cop in many ways. All of this, you have the mental gymnastics in your head as it's going on, trying to take it in and enjoy it, but also recognizing you got to be right in what you're saying and precise in what you're saying. So that's the eternal balance. And I think the ones that get to a certain level understand how to make that work and how to make it feel real.
Couple more things here for you. This is one thing I wanted to make sure we touched on today. Gambling in the NFL. Cause I understand, I from your standpoint, play by play, it's infiltrated how I do believe some networks want you to approach the game, maybe added in the line or different gambling numbers into the broadcast. I don't know if that's what CBS or Turner say to you. I don't know for sure, but my guess is they're going, it's being added into things more and more over the next really six, nine months. But you got players from the Lions getting suspended, from the Commanders getting suspended, Calvin Ridley suspended, Indianapolis Colts player suspended. When you hear about these things, how do you go about trying to tackle potentially discussing Calvin Ridley being suspended for gambling and adding that into a broadcast?
Yeah, first and foremost, I can just tell you this is my own personal experience. Nobody at my particular networks that I work for has ever sent down the edict that you now have to incorporate gambling in your coverage. Might there be a promo read? Are we doing more and more of those than ever before? Absolutely. You know, there was a time where you would never mention an over-under.
Right.
Or a line. And now it's part of a promo read. Certainly in NBA coverage, both local and national, it's there every game. And it's not just an occasional pop-in. It's a part of the presentation. But editorially, I've never been told one way or the other, hey, keep an eye on this. Be aware if they score a touchdown late, that's going to change a lot of money. No one's ever approached me in regards to that. So then you have to make a determination on a personal level. Is it something that you want to cover? Is it something that you want to do as an add-on? I still, to this day, have never written onto my boards what the spread is on a game that I'm covering or what the over-under is. And at some point, Jay, you might be right. Maybe it is something that becomes part of the fabric of what we're doing. But for me, Right now, I'm not there. I'm not a gambler. I always viewed it. I worked too hard to just toss my money away. I think I lost a bet in college that stung me for a long time that I thought was a sure thing. I had it in the bag. Ironically, it was a Raiders-Chargers Monday night game, and Dan Fouts was playing in the game. Years later, I told him about it when we were paired together. Dan is a close friend and one of the best people that I know, let alone one of the best people that I've worked with. And I mentioned, you know, I had a bet on a Charger-Raider game, and you guys got off to a hot start. And then, I don't know, the game turned on its side, and I didn't win my bet. And you might have been the reason why. And Dan's point was, well, that's on you. You know, who told you to gamble on us or pick us? And, you know, that's one of those things where it hits you like, oh, yeah, there's real people involved here that play a role in a lot of money changing hands. Look, there are rules, and there are always going to be rules. And it's on the player to follow the rules. You can cry ignorance. You can say, I didn't realize, I didn't know, I thought I was already gone from the facility. I'm sorry. Can't break the rule. And for those that are saying, I didn't know, I didn't understand, I didn't pay attention, I'm sure every team at rookie orientation, at player orientation, at the different sessions that they do during training camp, it's covered. No one in the league is trying to keep you away from the rules. They're trying to let you know, and it's on you to follow the rules. You know, we've all been pulled over at some point, and you start going through the Rolodex of excuses that you can come up with. And more often than not, the cop says, yeah, I don't care. You were doing 78. You're done. It's over. See ya. And he was like, well, no, but I really wasn't. I just happened to accelerate because they don't want to hear it.
Right.
You know, the old, oh, no, I was just keeping up with traffic. The guy in front of me. Well, yeah, but I didn't stop the guy in front of you. Stopped you. So I get it. I understand that it's complicated, but to me, it's a touchy issue. And my hope is there will be more clarity. And I understand that there are a bunch of people out there that are playing fantasy sports, and the lines blur as to what's accepted, what's not. These are players that are also made examples of because they want this thing to stop. And the only way to stop it is to show that they're actually serious about it.
I always think how foolish it is of players to, I understand there's an addiction. Like, some people are literally addicted to gambling. I don't know if the players that get suspended are classified as addicted gamblers. I don't know. But I always find it foolish, maybe odd, that if you know it's against the rules, why do it in the team facility? It's doing it alone is against the rules to begin with. Don't get me wrong. Well, you know, it's going to be trackable, that you have to be in, like, if you're outside of, if you're in a certain state, you can't gamble on your phone. Like, there are laws for this, but to do it in the team facility, I don't know about you, Ian, but to me, that's like, I know I'm breaking the rule. I'm going to break it here. How foolish can you be? I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but that's kind of how my mind is about breaking the rule in the place where your paycheck comes from. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Jay, some people have an air of invincibility, or they just don't think rules apply to them. And again, we might get to a place where this is considered okay.
Correct.
It might. I don't know. I mean, the question, Jay, to me was always the same. The sanctity of the sport and the integrity of the sport. And can we allow those that participate in these events to gamble on them and say, well, no, not my game, not my team, not okay. But once you open that door, even just a crack, there are people that get themselves into serious situations. And the only way out is to resort to something completely underhanded, or they get in bed, sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively, with the wrong people. And you find yourself in a desperate situation, and oftentimes desperate situations call for desperate measures. So you just never know what someone is capable of, given the dire circumstances they might be facing. The Lees are trying to avoid all of that. And probably the best way to do it is say, hey, don't gamble. That's it. That's the rule. Steadfast. Well, but I bet on soccer. Okay. Don't do it. It's not that simple to police. And now with the phone, it's too easy.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a bookie. You don't have to have the guy down at the corner and going over and giving them your picks for the night and then sitting at home seeing which one hit. It's all at the touch of a button. And this is part of society in general, Jay, not to get into a deeper story, but social media and the immediacy of things has changed a lot of what society has become, because it's just there all the time, 24/7. So it's made our life so much easier and so much more convenient in many ways, and has presented a whole new set of challenges for some people that allow it to take over their existence.
Last thing here, and I wanted to touch on John Morant, and Zion Williams said there's just not enough time for to do that today. But we have never, I don't believe we've ever discussed Kobe Bryant together when you and I have been together. Kobe Bryant's my favorite basketball player. I loved him. Really got heavy in the NBA, being a big NBA fan. When Kobe got drafted in 96, 97 season, and I loved watching him play for the Lakers, doing what he did. Can you give us, at the end of the show, what it was like calling Kobe Bryant's game in the moment you realized this kid's different?
So for me, I got into the NBA as a broadcaster in 1994. So I got the second half of the Jordan championship run from the Bulls. And I truly thought, all right, I'm never going to see anyone like this again. The difference you felt walking into the arena when you knew that Michael Jordan was a part of the game that you were calling, it just felt different. It was visceral. You could feel it. You could feel the energy. And that was whether we were doing a game in Chicago, if he was visiting the Nets, forget it. You know, the Nets were not drawing a whole lot of fans back then. When Michael Jordan was in town, there was an actual buzz at the Meadowlands because people were showing up, not Net fans, but basketball fans, to see this guy play. So I really thought that was it. That was going to be the ultimate for me early in my career. Well, Kobe Bryant comes along. And Jay, I don't know if you know the story. I can tell it very quickly. But he really should have been a Net. They scouted him. They loved him. They wanted him. John Calipari just got the job. The GM of the Nets was John Nash, who had come over, had worked previously with Philadelphia and Washington, and they loved the kid. And they were going to take him. And then word got out, basically, that they were going to take him. And Kobe's agent, Arne Tellem, at the time, had a chance to get him to L.A. They just thought, for the sake of who he was, what he was all about, what he could become from a marketing standpoint, that L.A. was the place. So they'd worked out a deal already with Charlotte, Vlade Divac, and they basically said to the Nets, they've denied it, but I've heard it from others. Basically, maybe it didn't come from them. It came from tangential people connected to Kobe. They said, look, if you take him, he won't play for you. He'll go overseas, lived in Italy. He's comfortable there. He'll just wait it out. So this is the first pick of a new era. Yeah. John Calipari is taking over. And they said, if you take him, it's going to be embarrassing for you. And Calipari got cold feet. And he took Kerry Kittles, who turned out to be an excellent player.
Yes,
Kerry was an outstanding NBA player, was a part of a team that went to back-to-back finals and was an integral part of it. Kobe Bryant turned out to be an all-timer. So how would things have been different? Kobe came into the Meadowlands and he had a duel. You could look this up on YouTube. Him and Stephon Marbury went back and forth. Both went for 50 plus. The Nets were not very good that year. And Kobe was tremendous. And after the game, our sideline reporter brought up the idea that the Nets could have taken you and what would have been different if the Nets had taken you that year, back in 1996. And Kobe's answer, which was so cold-blooded, truly, his answer was, well, the Nets would have won the game tonight. I can tell you that.
That sounds like Kobe.
Great answer. I mean, tremendous answer. So, to put a bow on it, I thought it was over with Jordan because I just had never felt anything like that. I was wrong. Kobe took over the mantle, and every time I worked a game that he was playing in, it was different. There was just a unique energy to the arena, to everything surrounding it, to the action, to the reactions. And then I would say the same with LeBron, that I thought with Kobe, that would be it. And then LeBron came around and there's just a presence. There's something in their comportment, in their being, in how others view them. And that's tough to find. You know, I'd say Steph Curry now is not quite
right.
That same feeling, but he's got elements of that where him warming up is a spectacle. People line up to see him go through that workout, and some of the shots that he can convert during a game, you just throw your hands up. And that's a special quality. And Kobe just had that it factor. He knew he was all that. He showed it. And man, he would seek out weakness and then attack. You know, that's an ultimate competitor.
Last thing, question, I answer quickly if you could. Do you think we'll get another player? Like, you didn't think you see another Jordan, and then there's this guy named Kobe Bryant who had a similar, not similar buzz to him when he was in the arena. Then comes around LeBron James, similar buzz when he's in the arena. Do you think we'll get that type of player in the NBA shortly after LeBron retires? I don't know when he's going to, but it seems like it's possible. Because, I mean, you had Magic and Bird and Kareem, and you get these guys, but right when you think it's not going to happen, it does. So maybe I'm answering the question for you. I don't know, but do you think it's going to happen shortly after LeBron retires?
Jay, I'm older than you, which means that I've just spent more time on Earth than you, but sometimes older also means that you don't necessarily see what's coming around the pike because you're caught up in your reality. And I'm going to tell you that there's a version of me that might say, no, that's it. We'll never see another. But I just know the truth. We will. We're going to see another one. And we'll see another one after that. And another one. You just don't know how and where. These guys are not made in a lab. They're human beings with backgrounds and parents and upbringings and challenges and triumphs and tragedies. And all of those things mixed together creates someone exceptional. On the basketball side, I don't know what Wembanyama is going to be. Boy, he looks the part.
Yeah.
And he's got all the attributes that you look for. The one aspect, Jay, that you never know is until they're in the arena. And now it's all on them. You just don't know how that person is going to react. Jordan loved it. Kobe loved it. LeBron, I don't think he always loved it. I think he had to get there. Mm-hmm. I think Jordan and Kobe naturally, it was in them. It was a part of them. And LeBron had to take certain steps to eventually make that a part of who he was. And I don't want to speculate too much. And I don't want to use the word that I was thinking because it's not appropriate in some ways, but I'll say it in a different way. To have the killer instinct inside you, it's not a given for all of these athletes. Mm-mm. So you just don't know until the rubber hits the road what someone is all about. We found out what Jordan was all about. We found out what Kobe was all about. We eventually found out what LeBron was all about. No one questions his competitiveness, but there were questions at different parts of his career about how do you handle the moment, the fire, and what it requires. So that's a much larger scope to try to determine with athletes. And it's the same NFL or NHL or Major League Baseball or soccer or tennis. The similarities are so close athletically, skill for so many of the best, but there's one aspect that makes someone a little different and a little more exceptional. So who's that going to be? There will be another one. There's no doubt in my mind.
Ian, it's fun having you on. We'll have to reconvene and get back together next year, maybe another time this year. Not sure. Your schedule's going to ramp up again soon, so you'll probably be too busy. But I look forward to doing it again next year, 2024. A lot of good stuff coming up. We don't know what we'll talk about at that point in time, but I look forward to that chat next year during the summer of 2024. Ian, thanks for coming on the podcast once again. I really appreciate it.
Jay, you got it. I've never had melon, any form of melon. So I'm just going to leave you with that one last bit of information.
Ian Eagle is the best, the absolute best. Love having him on the show. Love being able to tap into some of his expertise and hear some of his stories with Bill Raftery and other things that he has experienced during his long, illustrious career. Look forward to having Ian Eagle on the show next year as well. Once again, try to make him a staple on the podcast every summer, every offseason. Have Ian Eagle featured here on the Jay Stevens Podcast. Also, I'll be looking out for an interview with myself and his son, Noah Eagle, the new voice of the Big Ten on NBC in prime time. Going to try to get an interview with Noah Eagle at some point before the college football season starts in the fall. Thank you for listening to episode 281 of the Jay Stevens Podcast. I will see you next time.